Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hi, everybody.
Hey.
Sorry, you always do the formal hi, and I always do the like. that type jingle. Of thing.
Yeah.
I like
it. Darren, can you believe we've been doing this for, what, 4 or 5 months at this point, these remote episodes? And by the way, they're working great. I think we're doing a pretty good job, if I do say so myself.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I'm just as happy as ever to talk to you guys. You guys are my respite during the week. And, you know, podcasting is one of those things where obviously it's better to be in the same room, but we're lucky to be in a medium that obviously can be done remotely. And you know mm-hmm. what? I can be naked for this. So,
which you are now.
Win-win.
Reports are coming in. Yes, reports are that you are naked during every episode of Martini's a Murder.
Yes, that's just pure fact. We're not on video for this. You know, I know we are going on tour soon, a virtual tour. I'm not naked for that, I promise. I want to get people to actually watch. But, you know, Listen, you got to be comfortable in your birthday suit.
Absolutely. And speaking of the world tour, Darren, we did announce last week on last week's episode that we had launched our world tour. So episode 1 is available now. It's the same thing. If you're listening to this in your podcast, you know, player, it's the same exact thing. But you get to see our shining faces. You see Matt the bartender. You see some extra visuals. You can watch it right now if you wanted to by clicking in our show notes. It's oxygen.tv/tour1. All one word there, and be able to watch it right now. How fun is that?
I'm in. I mean, I've already seen it because I was like, in it.
Yeah, right.
But I'm gonna watch it again just to stare at your beautiful face.
Oh, thanks. You look way better. I need to my lighting situation.
Well, I have 2 ring lights in here now. Like people has taken over my freaking apartment, and I've got like a whole studio set up here now. So
would people like to send me multiple ring lights and like maybe like a makeup budget and all that type of stuff, or no?
Hey Matt, do you want to send John multiple ring lights and makeup and stuff? He is
Matt's
here today.
What?
Oh, we can't afford that, John. Sorry.
It's all right. Times are tough.
I think if Matt was a good boss, throwing it on a limb here, I think he would take his own money out of his own paycheck, which we know he's not earning, and get you some ring lights. That's just my suggestion.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. That's all I'll say.
Well, let's see what happens. Matt, that's on you now. But Darren,
are you drinking today, by the way?
I was just drinking a coffee because it's very rainy and like gross here today. And I have a tennis match after work. So I'm trying not to be like, you know, even a little bit tipsy or dehydrated. Alcohol dehydrates you. So I want to just be in tip top shape.
Sweetie, coffee dehydrates you too. It's a diuretic. I don't know how to tell you that.
Well, at least coffee will like wake me up a little bit, you know?
Absolutely. And you're playing not doubles.
No, not doubles, just regular singles tennis, yeah.
And so you play indoors?
No, outdoors.
Even though it's rainy there? It's okay?
Well, it's fine now. It was rainy throughout the afternoon, and now it's fine. So I'm assuming by the time we play later on this evening, it'll be nice and dry. And I will have all the caffeine pumping through my veins.
Well, I'm not playing tennis today, so I took a shot of vodka before starting this podcast, and I'll be sipping a vodka
You'll
soda
be good.
About this. I'll be fine, sweetie.
I'll be fine. You know, Gina, the staff user, we should do an update because She recently reached out for our addresses, Darren, because she has something in the works that's going to be sent to us. So look out for an update from Gina the Staff Boozer in the coming weeks. Matt, you're here today. What has life been like for you as the bartender that doesn't bartend anymore?
Well, I bartend for myself.
Right.
Wow.
Okay.
Riveting stuff here. Riveting.
Yeah. Well, Matt, while you're bartending for yourself, Darren, I want to talk really quickly about Peacock, because remember how last week we just ranted and raved about it endlessly?
Yes, but it was like, I couldn't believe that I was the one talking about user interface.
Yeah, I know, that's true.
Like, between the two of us. Also, before we even get to, like, people who downloaded and shouted it out, I gotta be honest. So my mom listens to this podcast. Shout out to my mom.
Shout out
and
to
my mom texts me and she goes, wait, you've never seen The Office? And I was like, no, mom. Like, she was, like, ashamed to call me her daughter. And she was like, are you, like, what? And I was like, wait, mom, have you seen The Office?
Yeah.
And she's like, yeah, your brother recommended it to me, like, you know, 10, 15 years ago or whatever. And she's like, and I watch it. And I was just like, how is it possible that my mom has seen more television? Yes. Yeah. Than me. I'm the one into entertainment. I'm the one in television. I was shook. So that I feel like this is my time to catch up on The Office, because I don't want my parents to disown me.
That is certainly very shook-worthy information, I would say. I wish you would watch it, Darren, because it's one of those shows that, like, okay, I don't know if you get this way, and we're going to get into all these details in a second, but, like, of today's case, I should say, because it's not just a Peacock podcast these days, but it's one of those shows that I'm worried, I don't know if you're like this, where, like, everyone loves it, everyone's talking about it and then, well, then you go to watch it and you have such high expectations, and then it's like it doesn't quite live up to them. But really what is happening is just, you know, everyone hyped you up. I feel like that's what happened to me with Game of Thrones. Like, I was definitely late to that. I started it and I just could not get into it the way everybody else was. And I know Matt's a big fan of Game of Thrones, or at least he was at one point.
I'm a fan of Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
Even though everyone was having, like, huge fights about that fucking ending.
I was like,
guys, it's a TV show. Like, I hate to say it, but I was like, yeah.
Well, Game of Thrones is not on Peacock, but Darren, I did want to say one thing that I realized about this app that I didn't mention last week. Say what you will about the Kardashians and what their place in pop culture, whatever. I love Kim Kardashian. We had a special with her on Oxygen. I think she's amazing. I also am obsessed with Keeping Up with the Kardashians. And guess what? There's a whole channel of just Keeping Up with the Kardashians on Peacock. And I have it on right now. It's an old episode with, well, Bruce Jenner at the time, and Rob, who is never on the show anymore. So, it's just 24/7, the best of Keeping Up with the Kardashians. And I absolutely love it. I think if you guys love the Kardashians as much as I do, you're going to want to get Peacock.
Oh, well, I mean, honestly, like, I have just been downloading that app. As I've been saying, I've been putting Saved by the Bell on in the background. Just
that's right.
A little comfort.
Yeah.
Even the college years bring me comfort, people. but I'm going to take this time to really dive into The Office, because I cannot be a shame to my mother.
No, you cannot. You should not. We should give some shout outs, because remember we said if you guys are downloading Peacock, we're going to shout you out on the show. Shama Horton Dawson in our Facebook group wrote a huge thing in one of those big giant text things. And she said,
I saw that.
Yeah. She said, we downloaded Peacock and we paid for a year. It's amazing. And then like 20 people also said the same thing.
And by the way, a lot of people said, good call, Darren, on the user interface. Okay.
Oh, is that right? I didn't see
that. So I'm going to say, well, Wendy and her husband are actually watching Psych 2,
first one? I forget if you were.
I did not.
Oh, okay. I thought you might have been a fan of that show or whatever.
No, I haven't. It's another one on my fucking list.
I don't even know what it is, but everyone is like freaking out about Psych 2. Hillary, Allison, Erica, and many others are using the free version and they love it.
Yeah, Veronica Bennett says, I've always wanted Law and Order Criminal Intent streaming. There it is.
That's the best feeling, because whenever Law and Order is on television, I always stop, because there's just some kind of feeling of like classic television that show really kind of captures. I don't know how to explain it. Maybe I'm just too nostalgic.
No, it's nostalgia. It's like having Saved by the Bell. But you know what? I'm not a criminal intent person. I am a special victims unit gal.
Oh, you're one of those types, huh?
I'm one of those. One of those. Yes.
Well,
yes.
Let us know if you're downloading Peacock and enjoying it as much as we are. We're going to talk about it all the time. There's always new stuff. It looks like that's being added. The other cool thing about it is, Darren, in the trending tab, you can see like the latest updates on like headlines and what's going on in pop culture, which is also something very different from like a lot of other streaming services. So I like it a lot.
I've been loving it, and I've been getting nothing but positive feedback. And you got to admit, the branding "Free as a Bird" is pretty good.
It's so good. That is really good. Real quick before we get into this case, Darren, we announced this on Thursday's show. We have face masks with our branding on them available to anybody who wants to buy them.
Hell yeah, we do. And I'm so excited because not only do they have our regular logo, which I'm wearing that t-shirt today, but we also have our sort of updated LGBTQ plus pride rainbow logo, if you will. And that's like one of my favorites. I wore that on the Gay Pride Parade last year. And so you can get both of those masks at shopoxygen.com.
Remember parades and just like being around human beings? Wasn't that crazy? What a crazy
time. I mean, the concept of even like going to a bar now is like, what?
What? Although not for some people. Some people are still, unfortunately, not really paying attention to that stuff, which is sad.
Yeah, but I mean, listen, I could go to a bar in New York City right now, but you best believe I mean like walking into a bar because I'm having drinks outside for sure.
Yeah, totally. All right, well, let's get into this week's episode. We've done all of our kitchen work, our cleanup, or whatever it's called. What is the term?
Our housework, basically.
Housekeeping.
Housekeeping. Yeah.
There we go. I don't know why I said kitchen work. Okay. Anyway, let's get into the case on the night. By the way, Matt, are you good to go? Are you stirred up?
Are you still alive? Or
yeah. Are you there?
I'm here.
He's laughing at something. That's fine. Okay. We'll find out what that is sometime.
It's only a murder we're talking about. No big deal, Matt. Definitely laugh at it. So funny.
The case is so funny. All right. Well, anyway, on the night of July 29th, 1976, the police received a call about a homicide in Pelham Bay, the Bronx. A homicide detective told Mark of a Killer, quote, "That night, my partner and I were the only two men working, and it was just another homicide. When we arrived, there's a parked car and some shots were fired into it. There's a big crowd around people and they're hysterical," end quote. So right off the bat,
not hysterical in a good way. Hysterical is in like freaking out. It seems like not like laughing. Yeah,
exactly. Part of the reason it was just another homicide to the detective was that his office, which covered three precincts in the Bronx, averaged 5,000 aggravated assaults and 145 homicides a year at that time. I mean, that is crazy high numbers. New York City, which, for those who may not know, you know, the Bronx is technically part of New York City. And in the 70s, you know, New York City was a different place than it is, you know, today. It's not.
It was one of the most dangerous places to live in the 70s. I mean, you know, we could talk about kind of when that changed. Really, Rudy Giuliani kind of came into the 90s and cleaned it up a little bit, whether or not that was right or wrong. But now New York City is the safest big city in the world. But I will say, crime has gone up here recently. I don't know if it's in protest of the police or it's just being inside for too long, being summer. But it's a little scary, I got to be honest.
Well, I've noticed too, since living there for several years now, that I've noticed in the news and just, you know, wherever I get my information, that in the summer, typically, crime goes up a little bit, I think, because people are just maybe outside more than they are, you know, inside in the winter and the fall time. But just an interesting detail. Well, anyway, crack had hit the Bronx and the homicide rate was way high. Not to mention, the year before, the city of New York had just barely avoided total bankruptcy. Again, completely different from where we are as a city these days, Darren.
Yeah, I don't think I would have wanted to ride the subway in the 70s, let alone live in New York City. So, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Well, according to the New Yorker, New York City had received assistance from the New York State under the condition that the city hand over its financial control. A corporation formed by the state, quote, insisted on significant reforms, including a wage freeze, a subway fare hike. Oh, don't we love those, Darren? The closing of several public hospitals, charging tuition at the previously free City University, and tens of thousands of layoffs. That's according to the New Yorker. So,
basically,
like, you know, life had to suck for a lot of people for things to essentially take over a separate type of control. Well, when the detectives arrive at the scene, they find 18-year-old Donna Laria dead in a car and 19-year-old Jody Valenti shot in the thigh and in a state of shock. Jody was dropping off Donna after a night out dancing at a club. She told police Donna lived with her parents and was training to be a medic with the Manhattan Ambulance Service, and she tried to give a description of what had happened. Jody said a man walked right up to the car and fired through the windshield. Whoa. Maybe one of my worst nightmares. When Jody leaned on the horn, the man jumped in his car and fled. An author told Mark of the Killer, quote, Jody, she gives a basic description, white guy, average height, maybe he's a little heavy. Gee, that only fit probably about 350,000 to 500,000 New Yorkers, end quote. Yeah, that's true. I mean, if you don't have any more specifics, that's not exactly the best description, I suppose.
Yeah, no, not at all.
The detectives canvassed the neighborhood and found a woman who looked out of her window at the time of the shooting. One of them said she, quote, saw a double parked car, and then she went into her bedroom for a second or two and came back, and that double parked car was gone. It was a yellow colored Ford. End quote.
I mean, now, a yellow car is pretty rare anyway, so that's got to help to fucking narrow that down at least.
Yeah, that's true. But of course, she didn't get the license plate number. Two 44 caliber bullets for a Charter 44 revolver were found at the scene. A detective said, quote, our ballistics department knew right away because of the twist in the barrel. It was an 8-right twist, and that distinguished the weapon. It's a rare gun. I've never seen one before in police work. End
wow.
quote. And I'm not a gun person, but I do find, and what I mean by that is I just don't follow it. It's not a hobby. I'm not talking necessarily about gun control stuff. I just find, I do, however, find ballistics and forensics around the way guns work extremely interesting.
Well, I will say there's this famous, you've never seen The Wire, have you?
I have not watched it, no.
There's this famous scene in The Wire. I can't remember what season it was. Maybe it was early on. But anyway, essentially, the Detective McNulty and Bunk, they're two, like, you know, mm-hmm. they're two, you know, they're drug guys, but they're kind of investigating this homicide because it's relating to drugs. They walk into this apartment and they see, like, where the woman had kind of died of the bullet. And they're able to trace just through the trajectory of the gun, they're able to find the shell of it. Like, they're able to, like, really determine how the entire thing was fired off. From where enough to stretch back in order to find the shell casing of the gun without any evidence other than where she was. And it was just like, wow, this is, you know, I understand it's a scripted show, but I think it just goes to show how ballistics can really work.
Yeah.
You know?
That sounds amazing. I kind of want to watch it just for that because I do find...
Oh, it's one of my favorites.
Just that kind of information, I find it's amazing that, like, you know, people can just, like, really put together a whole murder story based on, you know, a bullet in a wall sometimes.
Absolutely.
Well, another detective said, quote, a 44 will not only injure you, it'll blow you apart. It'll take your head off. It'll take your arm off. I mean, it's that powerful, end quote. That's kind of scary, to be honest. The police couldn't find a motive at all, as friends of both victims said neither had any enemies. Police, by the way, if Darren, God forbid, something happened to you today, do you have enemies out there that could be potential... You know, like people that police might come after and talk about. I always wonder about that with you.
I mean, you know, how could anyone hate me?
Well, that's fair. True.
Right?
There you go.
How could anyone hate me? I hope not.
Yeah, Lord. Just keep that in mind. You know, it might be something to think about as we head
through. Should I start being nicer to Matt?
Maybe that's the thing you want to keep in mind, you know, before he ends up, you know, attacking you.
I feel like I'd rather risk my life than be nice to Matt. That's my assessment.
Yeah, that's true. Matt, do you have anything you'd like to add to that while we're on the topic?
Only that if I get murdered, you both know who did it.
That's true. It was me.
Well, we do. What we can't talk about on air is that Darren and I definitely know who would murder Matt should this situation ever arise.
Oh, yes, we do.
Anyway, back to this story.
And it rhymes with Flaren Flarp.
Flaren
going,
Flarp, among others. That's true. Well, anyway, police speculated it could have been a mafia hit that was a mistake because the neighborhood had a large Italian mafia at the time. Jody Valenti gave her first ever interview with the New York Post in 2017. She said, quote, "It took probably about 6 years of my life to be able to get in a car at night. It took a long time to be able to deal with the sounds of popping fireworks and stuff like that. But I faced my fears," end quote.
I mean, this is so, I mean, you know, we talk about PTSD from war. Certainly, if you've been shot at, I can only imagine. I mean, in a much, much smaller scale. I mean, when Andy's dog Waka attacked me 5 years ago, it took me so long to, like, be able to go be around big dogs again. Like, a really long time. Like, I was genuinely terrified. So, a bullet, a gun, that would just freak me out even more.
For sure.
And by the way, we should mention that we have used a lot of research from the show Mark of a Serial Killer, which is airing on Oxygen as a marathon on Saturday and Sunday, August 1st and 2nd. But back to the case. Before we get back to it, Matt, what do you want to say?
Oh, I just wanted to add that I wonder if it being completely kind of random is even worse. You know, like if you're going into battle or something, at least you know what you're doing and you kind of know what to expect. And after the battle, you know, the battle's over. And I know it's not that easy, and people have crazy PTSD from war. Obviously, it's horrible. But it's just a different thing when you just went out dancing and you're sitting in a car and everything's peaceful. You're with a friend having a chat and then like boom, 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 boom. So like, when would you ever feel safe? You know,
that's a great point. Take a drink. You know, I mean, obviously, you know, when you're signing up for the military, the army, you know, not saying it's not traumatic, but you do kind of have this expectation of, you know, something that's going to happen. And you're trained, you know, you're right. I mean, because certainly even the dog instance where it's almost someone you know and then they attack you, it's like, I couldn't be around anybody ever again. And so I can only imagine, like, you just never feel safe, you know, like sleeping at night would freak me out, I imagine.
I completely agree. And I will say this too, talking more about New York City is, I remember, you know, moving to New York City, it was the first time I lived in a big city, Darren. You know, I'm from, you know, rural Maryland. I went to West Virginia University, you know, hadn't really spent a lot of time in big cities. And, you know, I don't know if you remember your first gunshots, so to speak, in New York City, but I feel like most of us have at least heard what may or may not have been gunshots at some point in our lives in New York City. And I remember just being like, oh my God, like, that kind of freaked me out more than I was expecting. And that was just me hearing gunshots. You know what I mean? Like, being shot in the thigh is a whole different thing.
Yeah, and I don't think I've ever heard a gunshot in New York City.
Oh, really? Wow.
Not to my recollection. Ooh. But let's get back to the case.
Because
3 months later in Flushing, Queens, about 7 miles from where Donald Loria was murdered, 21-year-old Rosemary Keenan and 20-year-old Carl Denaro were out on a date. Now, Carl told Mark of a Killer that they were driving around and parked in a darkened street. He said that they couldn't have been there for more than 3 minutes. Quote, "All of a sudden, my arms and hands were just all bloody with pieces of glass. And I said, start the car. Get out of here. Rosemary, she was in a panic. I directed her to Flushing Hospital," said Robert. Just the sheer panic and just knowing how to direct someone to the hospital. And, you know, it's funny because one of the important things, certainly when you live in Manhattan, and I was thinking about this the other day because I live right by Sloan Kettering and I live right by Lenox Hill. And but sometimes for Lenox Hill, I can never, I know it's on 77th, but I'm like, is it on 2nd? Is it on 3rd? Is it on Lex? And, you know, knowing it's on 77th is important. But if case of an emergency, you got to know exactly where the closest medical center is, you know. And I took a walk up there the other day just to make sure I could familiarize myself because you just never know. So it's important to know where the closest thing is in case something ever happens.
Totally. Absolutely.
Now, according to the New York Daily News, Robert had had shoulder length hair, and it's believed the gunman had mistaken him for a woman. So, you know, it's funny because I have shoulder length hair and I get mistaken for a woman constantly. Let me tell you.
I was really hoping you would go with that punchline, and you did. So good job, Darren. I love that.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Well, a captain of the Queens Homicide Squad told Mark of a Killer, "No one saw anybody. There was no evidence except some fragments of a bullet. We sent it to the ballistics expert, and it was determined it was a .44 caliber, just like the bullet before. So the .44 caliber bullet fragment should have been a clue, but an author noted quote, the problem is it happens in two different boroughs now. You have the Bronx and you have Queens. And because of no computer system at the time, the police were unable to put these two together. So they had no idea what was coming. So we've talked about these task forces before, you know, where a murder can happen in Arizona, but then it could also happen in Utah. You'd kind of think, considering the Bronx and Queens are only mere miles from each other, you know, New York City itself, with the five boroughs, ain't that huge, all things considered. You'd think that they would be able to talk to each other.
It's such an interesting detail that I feel like we don't emphasize enough in this genre that you and I are in, Darren, in true crime, which is that, and it's one of the things I've learned, especially over the last couple of years doing this show, is just, you know, even today, the networking of information and between police departments all over the country just doesn't feel like it's up to par. And then, yeah, this is in when? The 70s. So, like, yeah, there was no kind of network database.
Right.
So it's a whole different kind of approach to every investigation.
And it makes me wonder how many cases probably could have been solved if they happened 30 years later or something, you know?
Right, totally.
Well, less than a month later, 17-year-old Donna DeMasi and 18-year-old Joanne Lamino were sitting on a stoop in Queens when they were shot. Donna was shot in the neck and Joanne was shot in the lower back. Both thankfully survived, but Donna was paralyzed by the shooting, according to CBS News. Again, she was shot in the neck, so I'm sure it severed her spine in some sort of way. Police once again recover a 44 caliber bullet fragments, but they still don't put it all together. It's just so frustrating. An author told Mark of a Killer, quote, in the 1970s, where you have hundreds of murders per year to investigate, and you have two girls, but look, they're surviving. It is not in the front burner. Had this been today, at that moment, the police would have put this together. Computers would have picked it up.
Not
just
even
our
that.
Point earlier.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. I was just going to say, not only that, but like, now they're social media, so like their family probably could have put out like an alert that it happened. And
the Citizen app alone, you know, probably would have helped. Well, two months later, on January 30th, 1977, police get a call about a shooting in Forest Hills, Queens. A detective said, quote, it's about a quarter to one in the morning. We responded to that location and the window was shattered. Blood was splattered throughout the vehicle, and it was actually a bloodied mess. So Christine Frund, who was 26, was rushed to the hospital where she died. Mm. She was actually a secretary at a Wall Street firm, and she lived with her parents. You know, 26, it's fucking tragically young. Another victim was John Deal, who told police that he and Christine had left a bar to go make out in his car. Hubba hubba, am I right? John and Christine had been dating for 7 years, and he had been planning to propose to her in a couple of weeks on Valentine's Day.
Sad.
And no surprise here, there's a 44 bullet on the dashboard of the car. One of the investigators knew that 44 caliber bullets were used in other Queen shootings, and he had also learned about the shooting in the Bronx. So Captain Joseph Borelli, who was head of the Queens Homicide Squad, told his detectives, I want the Queens Homicide Squad in my office tomorrow morning. I'll call the Bronx Homicide Squad. So finally, someone has been putting this together.
Us being New Yorkers, you know, we kind of understand the geographic differences here, but the Bronx and Queens are huge, huge boroughs. So the fact that they have their own homicide squads under one city, it's kind of hard to really explain. You know, most cities may only have one homicide squad. At this time, there was one for at least one for every borough, you know?
Yeah, and each borough has its own, you know, it's like its own city within itself. So
exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Looking for more of the true crime content you crave? From Snap to Buried in the Backyard to Unsolved Mysteries, NBC Universal's new streaming service, Peacock, has you covered.
You guys know how much Darren and I love True Crime Docs. You could hear it in her voice just then. And Peacock has so many awesome programs. I'm a huge fan of shows like Snapped and Killer Couples. Getting to binge the hell out of them makes being alone in my haunted house just so much more enjoyable, Darren.
I'm thankful for that because your haunted house absolutely terrifies me, John. But to our fans who listen to all of our episodes back to back, you're going to love this service, I promise. They've got a whole true crime channel that just plays endless crime shows. You're never going to run out of awesome content. Plus, more importantly, it's free.
I can't believe that it's free. That's the best part. On Peacock, you can stream your favorite shows or check out one of the many always-on channels, which are my favorite things, to get your true crime fix. Learn more at peacocktv.com.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
Whether you're working out, walking, or running errands, Audible can help you keep your heart rate up month after month with their pulse-pounding collection of thrilling audiobooks that you can't hear anywhere else. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog, which includes thousands of titles. This month, check out the Audible original, The Space Within. It's a chilling 8-part story about a psychiatrist, Dr. Maddie Weil, voiced by Academy Award winner Jessica Chastain, who is tasked with unlocking the memories of a child who went missing for 7 hours. Maddie soon discovers that there are more who have faced similar experiences, and the truth of what is happening to them may impact the fate of humankind. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500. That's audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500.
Well, in the morning, the captain and his detectives went over each case and discovered a lot of similarities. There was the rare 44 caliber bullets. The shootings were all late at night. The victims, this is like great, like, you know, detective sleuthing work here. The victims were all young and white. None of them were over 30. On March 8, 1977, police get a call about yet another homicide in Forest Hills. The victim, 20-year-old Virginia Voskarishian, hopefully I'm Voskarishian.
I think it's Voskarishian, yeah.
Yeah. Was a sophomore at Bernard College where she was an honor student. She was shot in the face, according to CBS News. A detective said, quote, she was carrying books and the bullet went through her books. We thought maybe for that split second she saw something, a gun or whatever, and she put her books up in front of her, end quote, which is so terrible. A witness heard the shot and saw the suspect running away, but couldn't provide a detailed description other than he was a young white male who was a bit heavy. After a .44 caliber bullet is recovered during the autopsy, the police formed a task force with the codename Operation Omega and announced to the public that they believe a serial killer is on the loose in New York City. And I, you know, in my years, Darren, of being a, you know, true crime podcaster, Operation Omega definitely stands out. I don't know about you, but we'll get to that in a second.
Absolutely.
50 detectives were assigned to Operation Omega, according to the New York Times. The press dubbed him the 44 caliber killer,
a criminologist. There you go.
What was in this coffee? Let me take
I was going to say, stop drinking coffee and get drunk before tennis, because if this is any indication of how you're going to hit that forehand, my friend.
it's not going to be a good look.
It ain't going to be pretty.
A criminologist told Mark of a Killer, quote, the city is searching for a 44 caliber weapon now. He's not stupid. He knows that. It gave him gratification, I believe. It gave him the notoriety that he was craving, end quote.
You know, it's tough, though, with cases like this because, you know, certainly this is very specific. And if I... Mm-hmm. There's this psychology of a killer where maybe you're like, I want that notoriety. You know, I want that name.
Totally.
I want to be seen. And then the other half of it is like, well, now that they know that I'm killing people with a .44 caliber, why not switch to a .22? Why not switch to something else? You know, so I can never be caught. And it's just interesting psychology there.
There's also this thing in my head where I'm like, you know, we can say that we're podcasters. There's a whole true crime network now. Isn't it interesting to wonder how these things would have been different in the back in the day if people kind of had podcasts and, you know what I mean? It makes me wonder how much of our genre is influencing criminals in a sense. I don't know if that's kind of out there.
You know,
but
what case I think about that a lot with is the Maura Murray case, because, you know, Tim and Lance have been covering that literally head to toe, more details than I've ever heard about it. And, you know, if they had been able to do that essentially right when that murder happened, if it had happened later, maybe we would know more than we do.
Yeah, that's true. Well, an assistant DA said, quote, "There is a heightened attention because the victims are primarily white middle-class couples, and now the whole city is focusing on not only the killings, but the name, the 44 caliber killer," end quote. The criminologist said, quote, "Psychological profiling at the time indicated that this individual may have had problems with women." Unlikely to be able to approach women in an enamorous way. These are tough words. Many serial killers need skin-to-skin contact. Ew, that's weird. They need up-close physical gratification of killing. This person didn't need that. For him, the focus was on the act of killing, end quote. Which is sounds like
and
a great...
And there doesn't seem to be any, you know, sexual abuse from what we know. So that just goes to show he's not craving... It's really about what seems to me right now about revenge on women. You know, he blames women for not being able to talk to them and not wanting him. So he wants to fucking shoot them.
Yeah, basically. Well, meanwhile, the police start looking for every registered owner of a 44 caliber weapon. On April 16th, 1977, Valentina Suriani and her boyfriend Alexander Esso parked their car on a service road to the Hutchison River Parkway in Pelham Bay, the Bronx, after going to a movie. Valentina was an acting major at Lehman College, and Alexander had been her high school sweetheart. Both died.
Well, police knew right away it's the same killer after looking at the crime scene. But this time, an officer finds a long letter in an envelope. So Captain Borelli told Mark of a killer, quote, "In the letter, he starts off, 'Dear Captain Borelli.'"
Oh, my God.
Boy, my antenna went right up. He wrote, "I'm not a woman hater," and he misspelled woman. Unclear how you misspell woman.
Yeah,
he is not a very smart man, it seems like. In the letter, he calls himself the son of Sam. Uh-huh. And says he's a monster. Here's a few passages. Quote, "When Father Sam gets drunk, he gets mean. He beats his family. Sometimes he ties me up to the back of the house. Other times he locks me in the garage. Sam loves to drink blood. Go out and kill, commands Father Sam." And this, quote, "I love to hunt, prowling the streets, looking for fair game, tasty meat. The Weemon," it's spelled W-E-M-O-N, which is obviously woman. "The women of Queens are prettiest of all. I must be the water they drink. I live for the hunt."
It's interesting because that word that you just spelled looks like demon, except with a W.
Exactly.
And, I don't know, just a weird little, like, you know, visual change there. But
well, the son of Sam also began sending letters to a New York Daily News journalist writing, "Don't think because you haven't heard from me for a while that I went to sleep. No, rather, I'm still here, like a spirit roaming the night, thirsty, hungry, seldom stopping to rest. Anxious to please Sam. I love my work. Now the void has been filled." So, and he ended his letter with, "I will see you at the next job, or should I say, you will see my handiwork at the next job." And, you know, to me, when you're reading this, clearly, you know, this is a schizophrenic type of break here, where Sam seems to be this evil demon voice in his head that he is listening to. That's his sort of God in a way to listen to, right? I mean, I'm using it colloquially, but that seems to be the case.
No, I definitely agree with you. And if anything, he almost kind of seems like the Banksy of serial killers. He's like, "You don't know who I am. I'll see you at my next spot." You know what I mean?
Right.
Like,
I could be anybody. Right.
Yeah. It's that same kind of mystery, but in a obviously way more kind of insidious way.
Well, on June 25th, 1977, Salvatore Lupo and Judy Placido were parked down the street from a disco in the Bronx when a guy jumped out of some bushes and fired at them. A loud noise, likely a dog that barked, distracted the son of Sam, and he missed, allowing the couple to escape. And on July 31st, Robert Violante went on a date in Brooklyn with Stacy Moskowitz to the movies. He told Mark of the Killer, quote, "It was a Saturday night. We came out of the movies, and we drove to what they call a lover's lane. You know, we're just hanging out, talking, we're kissing a little bit. And then it was a summer night, so we decided to get out of the car." The two decided to walk through a park, but Judy thinks someone is watching them, and they didn't think too much about it, but returned to the car. Robert said, quote, "So then we go back into my car, and this is the thing that I had a lot of guilt for many years. She turned to me and she says, 'Rob, let's get out of here.' I said, 'All right, let's stay five more minutes and then we'll go.'" Oh, God. Stacy was shot through the head, and Robert was shot across the face. He said, "The next time I woke up, I was in intensive care in the hospital. I was very afraid that I was going to die, and I kept asking for Stacy. My father, I believe, was the one who told me that Stacy had died, and, you know, I cried. She was just a very bubbly, alive personality, and it was very snuffed out by some maniac. I had a lot of guilt for a long time. I had a lot of guilt. I imagine. How could you not?
I mean, those little things, I always wonder about those, you know, little decisions to stay five more minutes and how that effectively changed the trajectory of his life and so many other lives, you know. But you don't you can't beat yourself up about stuff like that. You just never.
No, you can't. But there is something called survivor's guilt, you know, and that people talk about it, and it's certainly a thing. Well, obviously, at that point, a lot of people stopped going out in New York City, essentially. A lot of the victims had long brown hair, so women began cutting their hair off. The Son of Sam was
going out in New York City, just so you
know. That's why you're a hermit.
I heard about it in the 70s, yeah.
Yeah, you were scared.
Scared.
Son of Sam. You know, given your quarantine look, you could easily be mistaken for a woman.
My hair is getting completely out of control, so that could be true.
Well, obviously, the Son of Sam was covered incessantly by the media, and police were getting a mountain of tips. We've obviously all heard of the Son of Sam. The police were chasing as many of them down as they could, but nothing was panning out until a woman called who believed she may have seen the shooter in the Robert Violante and Stacy Moskowitz case. A police sergeant explained that a young lady was walking out of her house when a male approached her with something in his right hand that might have been a gun. She went back to her apartment, and then she heard shots in the background. She told police that she remembered seeing a car double parked by the hydrant, and she saw a police officer giving a parking ticket to the car. Quote, we checked for parking tickets, and lo and behold, a ticket was issued at a fire hydrant, and the registered owner of the vehicle was a David Berkowitz. Yonkers, New York, said the sergeant. Captain Borelli called the police in Yonkers, and the dispatcher said, oh, that guy, we know him. He shot my father's dog.
Oh, God. Sorry that you
had to that particular part. That's got to be a fucking tip if I ever heard one.
Well, detectives went to Berkowitz's apartment on August 10th, 1977. So, you know, we're coming up on that a little bit here in the next couple weeks on that anniversary. They see the car that got the ticket, and inside the car, they can see a duffel bag on the back seat with a rifle butt sticking out. A sergeant described catching Berkowitz, saying, quote, we're sitting there several hours awaiting the search warrant, and I observed a male coming out of the apartment building where the registered owner lives, and I jumped out of the car. I took my gun out and ran as fast as I could, put my gun on top of the window with two hands, and he had just turned the ignition on his car. And I screamed, police, don't you move your hands, don't you go for a gun. And his response was simply to just turn like this, I never forgot it, and just smile. My gun is 2 feet from his head, and he's smiling. He didn't flinch at all. And the first thing Berkowitz says to us, he says, quote, well, you got me. And he said, what took you so long? End quote. Interesting. Wow. So right away, the first thing he's saying is something of a confession, you know?
Well, yeah, it almost seems like this guy maybe wants to be caught.
Yeah, that's true. That's a good
point. Why leave a letter? You know what I mean? Like, why do that?
Well, when police searched the car, they found a letter addressed to the Suffolk County Police Chief warning, quote, you can't stop me. And then the back of the vehicle was a submachine gun, which I don't even really know what that is. It sounds like a machine gun, but like maybe not as intense, potentially. The letter was threatening to attack a disco, according to the New York Times. A detective told Mark of a killer, quote, he was going to go to a disco out in the Hamptons and just spray people, end quote. Oof. Oh, that's terrifying. They had captured him just in time. A police sergeant said, quote, when we took him from Yonkers Police Headquarters, this is at 2 a.m, Berkowitz says out of the blue, hey, guys, calls us guys like we're his buddies. He says, I guess the press is waiting for me at the New York State Police Headquarters with their cameras. And he says, can you do me a favor? Can you comb my hair? Comb his hair. He's going to serve the rest of his life in jail, and he's worried about his hair, end quote. That's an interesting detail that I never realized about Son of Sam.
I think that it was, you know, I can't tell you the exact, like, you know, psychology behind this, but clearly he's a narcissist and so obsessed with himself, you know, like, he has no empathy for anybody. I mean, listen, he just killed X many women, and he's like, fucking comb my hair. Like,
yeah, right.
Insane.
Well, inside of his apartment were photographs of the girls he'd killed that had been cut out from newspapers. So that's an extra detail there that is disturbing. About the apartment, a sergeant said, quote, there were holes all over the wall, and he would write a notation about each of the holes, and one of them I've committed pretty much to memory, and this is almost verbatim. It said, quote, hi, my name is Mr. Williams. I live in this hole. I'm raising little children to be killers. I can't wait till they grow up. End quote.
Wow.
So I'm trying to understand this. So there are holes not from bullets. Are they just holes in the wall? I'm kind of confused about this detail. I don't know.
Well, I mean, like, hi, my name is Mr. I live in this hole. I'm unclear.
Yeah, unclear on that one. Well, Berkowitz immediately confessed to the murders at the station, and he explained why he'd been killing. A detective explained, quote, there was a fellow that lived behind his house named Sam Carr, and he had a black Labrador retriever, and Berkowitz believed the dog was talking to him, end quote. Okay.
The dog
was apparently very thirsty and wouldn't let Berkowitz stop killing until he got his fill of blood, if that makes any sense. So there's a little bit of a metaphor, kind of allegory happening there. David Berkowitz was born on July 1st, 1953 in Brooklyn, New York as David Falco. David was adopted at birth, and a forensic psychologist said, quote, he has some early behavioral problems in school. He is bullied. He was told about the adoption when he was 7, and he believes his mom dies in childbirth. So he has some guilt and some angst about the fact that he is somehow maybe responsible for her death, end quote. I mean, there's a lot to, like, break down there, even just alone. A criminologist also said, quote, then when he found out in early adulthood, in fact, that his biological mother was still alive, he felt betrayed, and this turned that internal angst into rage, end quote. So, yeah, I mean, he's not getting all the details of his life. I'm sure, you know, if you were somewhat, you know, in that position, you would understandably be upset. That's obviously not to empathize or forgive him for any of the rage that he ended up manifesting into murder, but I mean, I don't know anyone that's ever been adopted or has gone through this, so I don't know how to really explain that, but I guess I can understand it to some
degree. It all comes back to mommy issues, my friends.
Well, according to Encyclopedia Britannica, David's erratic behavior began after the death of his adoptive mother in 1967 and intensified when his adoptive father remarried in 1971 and moved to Florida without him. That same year in 1971, David joined the Army and became a solid marksman before leaving the service in 1974. So that would explain some of the, expertise in these murders,
yeah, unfortunately.
Sure. The New York Daily News described David as, quote, a pudgy postal worker who worked a 4 to midnight shift sorting mail in the Bronx, end quote.
I'm sure he loved that.
Yeah. Well, in June 1978, David was sentenced to the maximum prison term of 25 years to life for each of his 6 murders, according to the New York Times. In 1979, the New York State Legislature passed the Son of Sam Law, which bars a convicted felon from profiting via any book, movie, or television deals, which I didn't even realize.
Yeah, no, we had actually, I think we had talked about this before, because, you know, some people, it's not really fair. And you know what? I'm blanking on the case that this just recently happened with. But, you know, you don't want to encourage people to be murderers and then they get $100 million book deal for their story.
Right.
You know, like, no, that's absurd.
Wouldn't necessarily be looking for that either, by the way. So there's that as well. It also, I think, is a really good way of, like, you know, making sure that people aren't motivated to kill to get these book deals. You know what I mean?
That's what I'm saying. You don't want to incentivize this.
Yeah. Well, from 1980 to 1987, David's assets climbed from $1,000 to $190,900 as a result of movie and book deals made on the convicted killer's behalf by his conservator, who was an associate of high-powered Brooklyn attorney, according to the Associated Press. So his conservator argued she was exempt from the law. She was ordered to pay $120,000 to 8 of Berkowitz's 13 victims in 1987. So basically,
you don't want to profit off of victimhood, you know, and off of these things.
Good for them that the victims' families were able to, you know, get the money from that. Also,
yeah.
In 1987, David became a born-again Christian after having a self-proclaimed spiritual awakening one night in his cell at Sullivan Correctional Facility in Fallsburg, New York, according to Psychology Today. Yeah, that's an interesting detail.
Oh, okay. I'm sure he wanted to be saved by Christ before he died for murdering all these fucking women. Yep.
Oh,
okay.
Maybe. Well, David Berkowitz is 67 years old, and he now calls himself the Son of Hope, which is a very different name than Son of Sam. So, Darren, what are your thoughts? Like, can you believe, like, how many people had to die before they were able? Like, I'm still hung up on the, like, investigation part of all of this, because you feel like if something like this was happening now, it kind of would unfold in a very different way.
Yeah, they'd have like a task force. I mean, I think the important thing here is, you know, a sign of the times about the 70s. We obviously learned a lot.
Right.
I'm sure after this, Burroughs started speaking and that set up task force and things. But just the Son of Sam law alone, you know, it would be pretty disheartening to find that, you know, Charlie Manson or, you know, anybody else was sort of profiting off of these things. You know, certainly if OJ had been convicted, no one would have wanted to see him get money for murdering two people.
Yeah, that's true. Well, tell us what you thought about today's episode on social media, at Jay Thrasher, at Carpe Darren, at Matt_the_bartender. Darren, I know we talked a little bit about Peacock earlier, but we do have one other shout out we want to give.
Well, Alyssa in our Facebook group says, I just downloaded Peacock. Time to binge all the things.
That's
heart
a great
tea.
Yes, that's true. Unfortunately, there might have been a little typo at the end. But yeah, Peacock's a great place to binge all the things. That's for sure.
Including The Office, which my mom will make sure that I do.
There you go. Mia posted in our Facebook group, tomorrow's my 26th birthday and I'll be stuck in a Zoom work meeting for most of the day. What kind of socially distanced fun thing should I do to celebrate after? Well, Mia, this is posting after your birthday, but we did want to say happy birthday. But
happy birthday, Mia.
Yeah, I mean, listen to us every single day. Like, go back and just re-listen to every episode. Watch Peacock. That's literally all I do, Darren. I don't know if you have any other suggestions.
Have a Paloma with Renee Stubbs.
Right, there you go.
Perfect. That's my, if you listen to our Another Shot, you'll get that reference.
We'll get that reference. There you go.
But yeah, and buy a Martinis and Murder face mask.
Hell yes.
That's cover something yourself. Fun.
Let us literally protect you. There you go.
Yes, exactly.
Matt, we zoomed through today's episode because we were just on a roll. And frankly, I feel like Darren probably didn't really want to hear what you had to say. But do you have any additional thoughts on Son of Sam as you helped produce today's episode?
The thing that stood out to me, I think, I'm not sure if this was in our research, if it made it in the research, but one expert was saying that the 44 Magnum weapon, it stood out because it's like a very big gun. And there were other psychologists that were speculating that maybe the guy was impotent or he was having sexual problems. So like the size of the gun, it is believed, was like very satisfying to him that he had that size of the gun.
God, men are tragic if that's true, but keep going. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. And the other thing that I was thinking about, just listening to you guys talk about the case, I really didn't even think about the fact that they're kind of like Lover's Lane murders, you know? Like, he's in there late at night, and like clearly like women are the victim, but also just like couples in love that like go to make out or whatever. He's targeting them, you know? And that definitely tells me, I think, that he is really angry at people, you know, at women, but also maybe just people who have love, you know?
It's interesting because that's such a great point. Take a drink. But also, yeah, I mean, do we know what his motives are? I don't know if that's ever really been revealed over the years, like if that was exactly what it was and if he had a penis problem with the size of his gun, so to speak, both metaphorically and literally. Yeah, definitely something that should be considered. Darren, do you have any thoughts on the size of his gun?
You know, as a gay woman, I'm not aware of this, but you know what? Knowing the psychology behind men and knowing Matt the bartender, that's got to be fact. It's got to be true.
And on that note, what better way to sign off today's show than that? You know what I mean?
Absolutely. Yeah. Guys,
we'll
thank you so much for listening.
Bye.
Bye.